Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I just got over, I guess, a bug of sorts, I'm hoping. This whole week, we've been kind of replaying different shows. Luckily, I had tons of interviews from the Miami Book Fair. But we continue with awesome celebrities. I want to welcome the program from Season 6 of The Voice, Kat Perkins. Kat, thanks for calling, and how are you today?
Oh, my gosh. Thanks so much for having me. I'm freezing in the land of Minnesota today, but all is good. All is good. I'm having a great week.
Well, that's fantastic. And so, Kat, now tell us specifically, your whole life did you want to be a singer? Is this something you always wanted to do?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I'm just one of those people that when you asked me when I was... I mean, I started singing when I was 3 years old. So when you asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I said, I want to be a singer and... or a Vikings cheerleader. So I'm glad that I chose the singing angle on that.
So the Vikings cheerleader wouldn't have been the best profession to make money, that's for sure. We know
well,
the stories.
That's for sure.
We know the stories that can happen there. So you wanted to be either of those things. So when did you kind of start doing your own, like, performing? How old were you?
Well, so I started singing when I was 3. I remember my first audience, one of my first memories is when I was 4. And then by the time I hit about 15 years old, I guess I recorded my first record at like 13. And then by the time I was 15, I figured out how to get paid to do it. And we did everything from weddings to, you know, street dances to, I mean, you name it, we did it. And I guess that's how you can say I started professionally, but... you know, we're talking in very rural Midwest. I grew up in North Dakota. So it was, yes, professional, but, you know, it was sort of just kind of the town was doing me a favor.
So doing you a favor. So you're getting that practice and going through that. Was school important for you, especially, you know, starting early in your career and your life, you know, being a performer? Did you see education as important?
Yeah, school was completely important to me, even though early on in my life, I really didn't enjoy it that much. Kindergarten, first grade was really hard for me. But once I got it together, I loved school, and I did really well. I actually graduated top of my class at valedictorian 4.0, and I had a 4.0 grade point ever since I was a seventh grader, from 7 through 12. And I absolutely just literally lived and breathed every subject, and I was just a sponge. Like, I wanted to know about everything that I was being taught, and I took every single opportunity I possibly could. At the same time, pursuing music very hard, so it was a busy life, but I loved it.
And how did you do that? Especially, I'm sure you were involved in lots of activities and stuff to kind of balance that and still be able to do your schoolwork. How many were you an only child, or did you have siblings growing up, or?
I had an older sister. She was 4 years older. So, you know, we're pretty on pretty opposite ends. When I was an eighth grader, she was graduating. But I looked up to her the whole time, and she was the same. Very good student. Took every single opportunity she could. And she sort of taught me a little bit more about how to manage my time and how to, you know, still be great at everything and make time in the day for everything. I mean, I was singing for 4 to 6 hours a day, plus doing homework, plus being a cheerleader, plus, you know, being in basketball and speech. And I even tried track 1 year. I mean, it was just sort of this chaotic, crazy thing, but I absolutely loved every single moment of it.
So how did you are you able to do that, multitask like that and stuff like that? You had to be a self-starter because your parents couldn't just be standing over you all day when you're doing homework, especially for hours.
Not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, Mom and Dad were super inspiring, and my dad was a really great student, and, you know, he pursued music beyond high school and then eventually became a music teacher. So I had a really, you know, strong upbringing in all of that, but I'm a Capricorn, and I always had this, you know, like... here's a great story. When I was little, I had this little entrepreneurship already happening. When I would, instead of doing lemonade stands, I would make people pay me a dime to sing for them. Instead of selling lemonade, sometimes we did both, and then I would sing for them for a dime. But I always sort of had this, like, mentality of, yes, a self-starter. And I kept myself to a very high standard for everything. And it was just, I don't know, I found that more fun, than especially in a very rural area where you can get bored real quick.
Well, it definitely seems like it. Now, thinking about this, Kat, you're going through this situation where you're multitasking so many different things. Advice, I'm telling you right now, homework is unbelievable for the top-level kids going into high school right now, especially ones that want to be involved in extracurricular activities. You wouldn't believe how overscheduled they are. And now, your time, I don't know, it seemed like you were very overscheduled as well, but again, you only had your older sister, and at that time she was already graduated, so it wasn't that big of a situation. But how, a lot of kids today have to have these helicopter parents over them all the time. How did you said you were a self starter, you're self motivated, so you basically told yourself, I got to create this time management schedule, especially when I'm singing for 6 hours a day, I'm cheerleading, and still to get my homework and studies done. That's impressive, and still being really good in school.
You know, and I was a nanny before this last year, you know, and I nannied for 5 years. And I was a little bit enlightened by, especially the third grade kid that that I had. He had so much homework as a third grader.
Oh, gosh, yes. Isn't it terrible? Yeah.
I just couldn't believe, like, I didn't really have it until seventh grade. And we really didn't have that. We had in classroom time to get stuff done in K through six, but you know, seventh through 12 was a little bit harder, but we still had teachers that were really good about giving us time to do assignments in the classroom and didn't have to take so much home. But at the same time, you know, I was up till midnight, 1 o'clock, and getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, probably not the best idea, but I also just was kind of one of those kids that didn't need a lot of sleep. And I would bounce up at 6:30 in the morning and go. But I do believe that a lot of times now they are overscheduled, and there's so much homework, and each teacher really, you know, gives them a lot for each class nowadays.
Well, it's a lot to do with Kat on Common Core. They're wanting to push the number of hours of homework, which is crazy, because again, I don't think they see the other side. I need to do a documentary on the other side, meaning what these kids do when they leave school. Homework was made when there wasn't lots to do after school. There is tons to do after school with these activities, and I think they're so important and rounding. But I think in high school, you're right. You have that more of that initiative, and I'm sure, Kat, the older you've gotten, just like the older I've gotten, and I'm 41, I have learned I can't spend these 5-6 hour days or I end up with the flu. So younger, you can do it, but the older you get, the more older, the less you can sleep. Because it'll come back to haunt you for sure. All right, so let's go. So that's unbelievable, your success. Did you end up going to college, Kat? Did you end up going?
I did. I ended up doing dual credits in high school. So I ended up getting most of my first year of college done during my senior year of high school. And then I enrolled and started college right after high school. At the same time, I was doing a show, and so I ended up dropping college and pursuing the show with my full attention, and I put college off for about, I guess it's probably 3 or 4 years, and then I went back and got my degree, but I ended up switching my interest by that point. So like in 2003 or 4, when I finally ended up with a degree, I graduated from Hair School, which was, you know, a nine month technical college sort of situation. So I still have some college credits. I never finished my bachelor's, but it's never too late, right?
It's never too late. And that kind of starts the story of The Voice, because it sounds like to me you were a journey woman in certain aspects. You were always performing. Things were, you know, you were talented. They knew that you had a profession in singing, but things just didn't come through. Tell us the story about The Voice.
Well, this is such a crazy, like, opportunity, the way that it even started. I had taken sort of a hiatus from pursuing music full-time because I ended up with a health issue, and I had to have vocal surgery on my cords. And I honestly just never thought I would, you know, I was pushing 30 years old at that point, and I thought I maybe would never go back into music full-time. I became a nanny and absolutely loved being a nanny. I nannied for two families, and then this opportunity came along. I was singing I devoted a lot of my time to performing for the troops in the Middle East, in, you know, just kind of 3-4 times a year, so that I could still keep myself singing. And what better way to, you know, be in the business through giving back? And I ended up recording a video at an airport on a layover one day, and I just sang out of the blue in Amsterdam. And the producers of The Voice saw this video, asked me to audition for their show. Now, mind you, I was a huge fan of this show. I'd watched since season one. I would stay late with the kids I nanny on Mondays and Tuesdays to watch this family. And I didn't even think this was a real email that I was getting. I thought it was a fake. And so I did some digging, and sure enough, it was real. And the little 5-year-old girl came home from school. She was in kindergarten at the time, and I told her about this email, and she said, "Kat, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you?" And, you know, the no-filter 5-year-olds, they're perfect because they are usually right, actually. And so it's this opportunity, and it just kept going and going. I mean, there's so many levels before you even see what happens on television. You know, to get to that point, to the blind audition, is a huge ordeal, and it takes about, you know, 2 months to get to that point in several auditions. So it was just crazy that it kept going and kept going. And then lo and behold, I get 3 chairs to turn on my blind audition, and that was Usher, Shakira, and Adam Levine. And the day that I chose Adam Levine as my coach was the best day of my life and probably one of the smartest things I've ever done, especially in a competition show, because he was an amazing coach, and the rest is history. And, you know, thank God for the voters and the supporters that got behind it, watched the show, really loved what I did, and my life has forever changed.
And that's amazing. I mean, because people don't understand, in any of these reality television shows, you have to be discovered in some ways. It's not as easy as getting in line. You got to have some sort of to get to those blind auditions, which are a ton of people, right? A ton of people, correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, we're talking thousands and thousands of people that it gets narrowed down to. And then when you hit that blind audition point, there's a couple of hundred people that actually get to do that. But then there's only, what is it, 48 chosen or something like that. So it's a crazy ratio. It's like winning the lottery to even advance forward in that competition.
Well, amazing. So going and doing that and then ending up in the top 5, I mean, that's got to be amazing, especially when you're talking your age also. Some of the other talent that was there wasn't at that age, and then also having the surgery. So what an amazing story you were on the show, right? And I'm sure they highlighted that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, I was one of the oldest contestants on the show, being 32 when it started and now 33. And, yeah, I mean, and thank God I had all this experience. I was, you know, competing with these kids that were 18, 17, 18, you know, 20, that I was like, I don't know if I could have ever done something so intense at that age. And the kids that were, you know, still in high school had tutors out there and still had to do school during the day, along with the entire schedule that we were, you know, put through every single day of rehearsal and the wardrobe and all of that stuff that goes with filming a television show. I'm really glad I was a little bit later in life doing this experience, and I'm so glad I had a lot of experience under my belt to be able to sing and do things under pressure and, you know, try to, you know, be my best every single week in front of 15 million people. It's impossible. So it was a blessing to be at this age and having that much experience and having gone through so much.
We're talking to Kat Perkins on the Total Celebrity Show from season 6 of The Voice, and we're learning the story. So how did your life change once you got to the top 5 and then the season ended? How did things change for you? Tell us some of that. And then we're going to get right into the important thing that you're on, because, again, my education standpoint of this, and that's your school initiative. But let's first go and find out how your life changed after that. Because I know once you get on television and you become a name that people rooted for, it changes, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, everything changes. I do get recognized quite a bit everywhere. It's like I can't go anywhere, and it doesn't matter what part of the country I'm in. And I don't know if I'll ever get used to that, which is, it's so great, because you really do get to thank everybody that voted for you and supported and watched and went on the journey with me, you know? So that's kind of weird. I definitely get a lot of perks. There's a lot of things that I never even thought of after the show, of clothing stores wanting me to wear their clothes and giving me so much, merchandise. And I don't know. Those things are, again, just, I'm not really a materialistic person, but those things are really crazy to me as far as life changing and going into a restaurant and having somebody buy you your meal because they loved you on the show. And, you know, just those kind of things are nuts to me. This happened to me this morning again, and I was buying furniture. And then it's weird for them to be like, I watched you, and you're trying to be in this normal life, like going to the grocery store and going to get gas and stuff, but yet you're still living this over and over. But those are the funny stories that have happened. I mean, the greater things are that I have so much opportunity in front of me. I have so many avenues of performing that people want me to do this and that and their events, and I've been able to give back so much by doing charity work. And that was my main mission. My main mission after the show was, how can I give back? And I've been able to do that and raise money for cancer and raise money for brain tumors and raise money for MS and all of these different things that feel so good to be able to use my last year of experience and status to do some great things for people.
You had that platform, and that's the important thing. Once you had the success that you had, then you wanted to pay it forward, which shows, again, your hard work and enthusiasm in the classroom, and then as a nanny and a down-to-earth person, you got the opportunity, you gained success. You're not going to just say forget everyone else. You constantly tried to help others. So let's talk a little bit about the Kat Perkins School Initiative Program. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So during the show, I used what I call like this goal setting thing that I learned when I was like in eighth grade, and I've used it ever since, where I write things down, literally, not just on my phone or on my computer. I actually write things down on a piece of paper, and I keep several journals of my goals. It's my goal setting way that I do things. And one of those things was, how do I combine young adults and music, because they're my two favorite things. And, you know, being a nanny and really, really connecting with kids in the last 5 years of doing this nanny job. And that was one of the things that I set out in my goals, saying I need to be able to work with both of those things at one time. And so I put together this sort of presentation and motivational speech that I had been thinking of for months. And I was like, what did I want to hear? What did I want to hear as a kindergartner? What did I want to hear as a fifth grader? What did I want to hear as an eighth grader? What did I want to hear as a senior in high school that I now know that I feel like I can give these tools to young adults and who are our future of this world to hopefully be better human beings, more successful, and, again, our future. So, you know, one day I'll probably be working for one of these kids, right? So I was able to do that, and I put together, I think, is a great presentation about following your dreams and setting goals. And at the same time, I always end the speech with being nice to one another. With the little kids, it's a little bit easier to, you know, encourage them to be nice to their teachers and be nice to one another every single day. With the older ones, I really stress the importance of social media and using it in a positive manner, and networking and finding jobs and finding college and finding, you know, networking with people that are just like you, instead of bullying people online and wasting your time with negativity and wasting your time on just unnecessary things. So it feels good to be able to talk to these kids about all of the subjects.
Well, it definitely seems like that. And so doing that, the ability to go out and talk in front of a lot of people, was that different for you? I mean, you've sung in front of lots of people, but now to communicate and be a teacher and a leader and a communicator with these kids and a mentor, was that different for you?
It was very much different. It came a little bit natural to me because of the singing, but I'll tell you what, I mean, I could sing in front of millions of people before giving a speech. Giving a speech, I got, you know, nervous, and my heart was racing the first couple times I did it, especially when I'm in a giant, you know, gymnasium full of 2,000 kids. And worrying about keeping their attention for half an hour. But I think I put it together in such a manner now that it is captivating for those 30 minutes. I also do sing at the end of it. So even when I'm nervous, I get to tell myself, listen, you get to sing at the end of this. So just, you know, focus on that and give them a good message. But it is very much different. But I had a lot of superintendents now tell me that I should become a teacher. And so many of these little classes, I want to become a kindergarten teacher.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They're so cute and they're so impressionable. And I'm now having this whole like midlife crisis about wanting to become a teacher.
Well, I don't know. If you keep having the success in music, we'll have to see. And that's a good update to kind of go to before. Do you look to doing your school initiative all over the country? I know you've toured some places. Are you looking to do it all over, or are you looking for schools right now to do this initiative?
Definitely looking for schools. What I did on the immediate is I basically focused on the Midwest and North and South Dakota and Minnesota, where I reside in Minnesota. We've even done some Iowa schools. And I've done now everything from kindergarten to actually college. And I've actually even done some adult things too, some higher education speeches as well with it. It's just been a crazy extension of what I set out to do. But it is time now to start branching out, and I don't feel like what I do is, you know, just pertaining to the Midwest. I feel like we could go into California, and we could go into Boston, where maybe there's other areas that these kids are maybe a little bit more underprivileged, and focus in a little bit more about the issues there, and expand this whole thing that I set out to do. So I'm definitely looking for schools right now. I'm booked up until May, but we are looking for next year, and I'm definitely looking to branch out from the Midwest for sure.
Well, that's fantastic. What's going on with your singing career? Give us an update on that.
Well, at the same time of all of this, I usually get 2 days a week to be home and focus on what's next, and so we are about halfway done with a new record for next year. We finished a little Christmas project the other day, which you'll see in the next couple of days come out on iTunes. And our next single is going to be slotted for soon after the new year, if not late January, early February. And it's a really fun song. And hopefully everybody that I've visited in this last year, you know, with the fearless message, will love this next venture of a song that I'm going to do. But we'll be releasing the EP next spring sometime, and hopefully continuing to tour. What's great about the school project is that I get to go into schools usually Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and then when we're in a certain area on Fridays and Saturdays, we do big shows with my music. So it all seems to work hand in hand together, and it feels right.
Well, that's fantastic. Where's the best place, Kat, we can find information on you? So first of all, people could go ahead and if they're superintendents listening or teachers that want you to come to their school to speak and perform, and then also for your fans to find more information on you where they can check out the latest stuff. Where can they go?
Absolutely. The best place to go is my website, katperkins.com. And that has all my contact info, and everybody's very good in my team about getting back to one another. I'm also in the loop on everything that comes through there because I love to be very involved, as you probably can gather. And then you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and everything social media at Kat Perkins Music.
Well, fantastic. Best of luck. I know that you're going to continue. Definitely look at kindergarten, but let your run go before you become a kindergarten teacher. What a great thing. You can retire
right?
from music and be a kindergarten teacher. The most famous celebrity kindergarten teacher. Could you imagine that one? You know,
that
would be better, especially after you're a little older to do it. Because honestly, those younger years, it's fun. But as I was telling you off air, my poor wife, and luckily she's sick right now because only four of her kids are in class today out of 17, which is unbelievable.
That's so sad.
That's sad. Those poor kids, and I ended up getting it too. So, well, best of luck to you, and it was a pleasure talking to you, and good luck with your music and your career. Take care.
Thanks so much, and thanks for having me on. Thank you.
All right, take care, Kat. All right, see you later. Okay.
Take care.
You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Author's Corner on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley, all the places you can find me. And I tell you, when I start interviewing Triumph Book authors, I'm just so pumped up, because this one definitely makes me excited, because to get the opportunity to possibly get to talk to him for two segments is an honor. So I'm excited to welcome to the program Johnny Unitas Jr., author of Johnny, You, and Me, the man behind the Golden Arm. And Johnny, thanks for calling, and thank you for coming down by Author's Corner. How are you?
I'm fine, Neil. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely.
Talking to you.
Absolutely, Johnny. And I guess the cool thing is we could talk for our Pittsburgh listeners out there and stuff that you were born in the Pittsburgh area, which is you grew up sometime in the Pittsburgh area, which I didn't know. So that you're already telling something special about your life and where Johnny was from. Tell us a little bit about that before we get into the book more.
Well, you know, I was born in Pittsburgh. My sister Janice and I were both born in Pittsburgh in the South Hills area. And, you know, when my father got picked up by the Baltimore Colts, we all moved down here to Baltimore and occasionally went back and forth to see my grandparents and aunts and uncles and nephews and nieces. And they still live there. And as a matter of fact, we'll be I'll be back in Pittsburgh sometime next year in June, where the Gridiron Gold is honoring all the Western Pennsylvania NFL Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And they're honoring my father, so I'm very, very proud to be there to represent him. And Joe Namath will be there, Joe Montana, Dan Marino, Jimmy Kelly, and representatives from George Blanda. So a lot of good quarterbacks come from your area, man.
I like that, but I'm going to say, hey, you know what? I have to keep in touch with you and see if I can somehow get in as a press pass or something. What an amazing event that is.
I'm happy to get you in, Neil. You just stay in touch.
Oh, I definitely will, Johnny. And especially, I'm like, wow. I mean, that group in general. But again, thinking about great quarterbacks and stuff. First of all, Johnny, what made you want to write this book? I mean, because this is this is an undertaking for sure, to go back in your life and Johnny's life and everything.
Neil, it was you know, I towards the latter part of my father's life, I was managing him since 1994, and as his agent. And of course, he never had an agent prior to that, and did everything with handshakes and that sort of thing. And so I stepped in and said, hey, Dad, you know, let's work together here. Let me get you some more appearances, make you some more money. And, you know, you can continue to be who you are, and I'll be the guy that they call the AH, you know, the bad guy. I can be good at that. So that way you don't have to change your demeanor and do the things you want to do. And it's an opportunity for me too, to get closer to my dad and travel with him, talk about life, talk about family, talk about his past, talk about how the different players he played with. So it's a great time being with my dad and closer to my dad as an adult and married and have children. And so, you know, when my mom died in May of 2012, my father dies in September 11th, 2012. So they died, you know, within 5 months of each other. And it was very difficult for me. And then on top of that, my father's second wife sued me. So with all that said, and I won't get into that, that's all covered in my book, and it's pretty elaborate, the story. And it shouldn't have happened in the first place, but it did. But needless to say, this has been a labor of love for me. It's taken me 3.5 years to write this story. And I dedicated both to both of my parents. They were both instrumental in my life and raising us. My mom was just a fantastic mother, raised 5 children, stayed at home while my father played and traveled. Kept the family together during this time, so my father was away. And it's just a kind of, I'm just let everything out in the book. It's kind of the underbelly of the family. I show how show people how my father was as a father, what he did outside of the game of football, and what he did giving back to the community, which was one of his passions. And he recognized the fans that without them, he wouldn't have been so successful in his life and career. And as well, his teammates felt the same way. You know, they still reside. Some of these players still reside in the city of Baltimore. And unlike today, players, they don't do that. But some do, but not most of them. So in any event, I just thought it would be a nice adjunct to my father's football career so that everybody can see what he was like as a person outside of the game of football. And so I cover a lot. I do cover football, but it's not truly a football book.
Well,
begin each chapter with a tidbit about football, whether it has some relation to my father or not. And then I roll into my father's life at that time. So it's kind of, it flows nicely. It's an easy read for those who don't like to read.
See, what's interesting, Johnny, when you talk about this is that I think that learning about, when every time I have celebrities on or people that have been surrounded by celebrities, athletes, or I always want to know the backstory. I'm not interested in hearing, we all know how great a player Johnny was, but to think about growing up with him and, you know, and you see these, portrayals, especially of Archie Manning with the Mannings and how he raised them when they were younger and things like that. And how challenging it was for Archie at times because of all the travel. I'm sure you dealt with the same stuff with Johnny, right? For sure.
I did. Yeah. I really did. And, you know, again, we're like the Mannings, we grew up as a Unitas, so it's not like our last name was Smith. So anytime my father played and didn't have a very good game, of course, you go to school and everybody's, you know, all over you like sauce. And why'd he throw that interception? He's a bum, you know. So you kind of put up with that. You grow up with that. And you mature a lot quicker. And for me, you know, I just knew my dad as my dad. At some point in my life, around 9, 10 years old, I knew his job was being a quarterback and how people, you know, gravitated towards him and, you know, loved him and that sort of thing. And I was able to, as a ball boy, go to camp with him, around that age. And it was cool. I was on the top bunk. Dad was on the bottom bunk and Jimmy Orr and Raymond Berry on the next dorms over. And, you know, I got to, not that was wonderful, pick up the sweaty jock straps and the shirts and clothes and put them in the hamper and change them out for the second half of practice and fix the helmets and the chin straps. And Rosenblum paid me actually $25 a month back then. So, I mean, I think I saw it later on in life. I remember. But it was more fun for me just to kind of hang around these guys. And they were just truly, I mean, they were all, you know, can I say the best way to say this is they're all common men for the everyday people, you know, and that's how they were. You know, there was no pretentiousness about them. It's not like we were living in New York, you know, or California. It was Baltimore. And the same thing goes for Pittsburgh. You know, my father never let go of his roots. You know, he's a blue collar guy and it's the same Pittsburgh and Baltimore kind of the same in that regard. So.
Oh, definitely. I agree. And that's where I was going to bring up that fact that, you know, it just seems like the Baltimore Colts at that time were like the Pittsburgh Steelers. I interviewed Art Rooney II. He talked about how he grew up with the team same way with his with his dad, Dan, and his grandfather, Art. And that the same type of situation you were at, you didn't just, hey, I'm at the game in the stands. You were literally getting to see your dad's interaction and his job, which I think is so important. And this is a great, I guess, parenting connection is that if someone could see your dad work, the more work ethic you can develop, the more you can understand what he does on a daily basis and help you form yourself as well, wouldn't you agree?
Exactly. It's a character builder, you know, it really is. And you know, when I was, you know, you're in the locker room with these guys, or, you know, they're a bunch of boys, you know, messing around, snapping towels and doing everything else. But, you know, they're real men. I mean, they come out and they play, and heck, they go out and smoke cigarettes and drink beer before a game, and they come out and play like there was no tomorrow. I remember a story, Jimmy Orr, he's in the locker room right before a game. I mean, literally, like maybe 30 minutes before a game, and he's in there shaving, you know. I said, Jimmy, what are you doing? And he calls everybody, you know, Taz or whatever. So I said, Jimmy, what are you doing? He's shaving. He says, he's got a game in 30 minutes. He says, Senor, he says, when you beat the competition, you always got to look good. So that's what he called everybody, Senor. Senor, you know, when you beat the competition, you always got to look good. So that's what he did. He shaved before every game. Who does that? I mean, I'm like a little kid. You're real impressionable, and then all of a sudden you see that. You know, like, gracious, this is funny. You know? But that's how those guys were.
It definitely seems like that's how those guys were, and I think that's when we go back when I interview a lot of the guys before the money was big. There was a different atmosphere, a different situation. So a lot of these guys are understanding they're going to have jobs after their career's over. I remember Andy Russell telling me about that. So many different stories of different players that were going through that process, and especially in your dad's time. So this is a job that they're getting to play a game that they love and get paid for it. But they weren't looking at this as going to be, hey, I don't really have to do anything when I retire almost. Or,
It's the thing, Neil, they love the game. You know, my father loved practice. You know, my father worked in the Bethlehem Steel as a pile driver in the off season. You know, that's what he did.
Oh, really?
And of course, And then, you know, my mom in the morning, she'd pack our brown bags. So, you know, my sister and Bob, my brothers and I would, you know, my father would take us all to school in the morning, and my mom would make him a brown bag too. So he brown bagged it to work as well. You know, and he didn't have any qualms about that. as long as his nice big fat bologna sandwich, he was happy. but that's just the way it was. I mean, he never lost sense of his roots. Okay, and everybody thinks that my father grew up poor. Well, he really didn't grow up poor. He just grew up in the Depression in Pittsburgh. I mean, it was a tough time. You know, there wasn't much to have, but he wasn't poor. He just grew up with that work ethic and continued to carry it through his life and instilled it in his children as well. I just think he's a wonderful father. And again, he didn't have a halo, but I don't have a halo. I don't know who does, but God bless you if you do. But the bottom line is he was a real father, and he instilled discipline when it was needed, and it was just great with us kids. I mean, helped us with school. You know, he was there when we needed him, and same with my mom. So they were high school sweethearts. They both went to St. Justin's High School, which I know is closed now.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know what that is. So this is where I have to kind of, when I'm asking you questions about Pittsburgh off air, I'm like, I'm going to have to do my own research on that. I mean, I thought, hey, you know, Johnny Unitas Jr., I'm good. I understand this whole thing. We can do this. And then I keep forgetting he's Pittsburgh. And also his running back mate that's still alive is from Pittsburgh, too. I interviewed him. I can't remember his name now. Star from the Colts. It'll come to you in a second. But
he was from Pittsburgh?
Yeah. He was living in Pittsburgh. At one point. I can't. I'm almost positive.
He was a running back?
Yeah, running back.
Yeah.
For the Colts. Oh, my gosh.
You know what year it was?
No, he was one of the stars that's still alive.
Oh, probably Alan Ameche.
No, was not Ameche.
No, not Alan's dead. Alan's deceased. But there's Alan Ameche. There's Jim Mutchler. He was a running back.
It'll come to me. He does still play-by-play for the Ravens and stuff. It'll come to me. I'm sorry. It'll come to me. But, hey, we'll just keep going in our conversations. Again, we're talking to Johnny Unitas Jr., having a blast on Author's Corner on the Total Education Network. Again, my website, TotalTutor.net. Now, Johnny, I love the fact you talk about school, and I want to break this down a little bit more. So your dad was very hands-on. Did he have high expectations for you guys in school?
Sure. Oh, yeah, there's no messing around with my father when it came to education. It was just, you know, something that, you know, if we needed help, we get help. And many a times he sat with us during math and reading and things of that. As he had a second family and got older, he didn't understand all that crazy stuff, you know, but he was still there to help. And if he didn't, you know, he'd get you somebody to help you. You know, that was very important for him. And consequently, you know, back in 1987, Neil, we formed the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Educational Foundation, which is a 501c3, and our platform for the foundation is the Golden Arm Award, which is given each year to the graduating college senior quarterback. We've had some great winners: Peyton, Eli, Andrew Luck, Colt McCoy, you know, just to name a few, Matt Ryan, you know, guys like that. If you go to my website, thegoldenarmfoundation.com, you can see the past winners, and all of them are very humble. They're all aspire to the same attributes that my father did. And that's why they're chosen. I have a selection committee that I rely on exclusively for these winners each year. They've done a fabulous job, and not one of them that has won the award has to give it back, unlike another award we won't mention. but the important thing about the foundation, it's a twofold thing, not only presenting the Gold Arm Trophy and what it represented to my father in playing on the field, character, integrity, teamwork, and sportsmanship, but we also give away scholarships, about $30,000, $40,000 a year each year to graduating high school scholar athletes who are moving on to college to play football, but more importantly, Neil, to get their education. And they recognize that. So it's all based on that. And we don't give them the money directly. Once they enroll in school, the money goes directly to the school so that we know it's being used properly.
Well, that's a tremendous story. I mean, a great story. And so the process of who wins the Golden Arm every year is very interesting, to say the least.
Yeah.
And you're looking for a quarterback definitely with a lot of character, it sounds like.
Character, teamwork, you know, values, what he does not only on the field, but what he does off the field, like my father did. And that's so very, very important. And it's, you know, because again, you know, you're setting an example for young children and kids and people and adults. And if you're not doing the right thing, then you're giving the wrong impression. And I won't go into what's happening in the NFL. It's a plethora of crap.
Yeah.
Excuse my French. But
yeah.
It's ridiculous. And it shouldn't be that way. You know, and my also, I'd rather see some of these players that come out early stay in college, because you know what? You get hurt, you're done, then what are you going to do? And no offense, I mean, I guess you can go, you know, work in Walmart. I'm not saying it's a bad job, but I'm just saying, you know, here you are, you put all this time and effort, and you've got the college, and you're just all of a sudden you're a football player, and someone's telling you that, hey, go make more money elsewhere. But you know what? Think about your life after football, and what are you going to fall back on? So I always stress that, and I think, and by and large, all of my guys, all the guys that have won my award have graduated college, every one of them.
And again, you could see from looking at their resume throughout their college career, were they the kind of person that was showing teamwork? Were they the kind of person, I won't mention names, who are in the front page of the paper? You don't want them on the front page of the paper unless they're in the news because of the great game they had, not because of their off the field antics. And we know who we're talking about. and you know that they're not going to be long term quarterbacks in the NFL. Plain simple. Think about it. Think about the best quarterbacks in the NFL and how their careers continue to be. And when we talk about these ones, they just have that character. They have that ability. And you could see that they could keep playing even when the skills start to diminish, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my father played 18 years. And nobody plays 18 years anymore, hardly. You know, Peyton is approaching that. You know, Brady's approaching that. Look at those guys, how they play. I mean, they're none of them are rah-rah. None of them are high fives, low five, and dancing in the end zone. None of that happens. You know, that's just not their character. You know, so again, if you look at all those guys that have previously won the award and will continue to win the award moving forward, it's very important for me that we pick the right guy. And in all likelihood, they're all candidates to win, but there's only one winner. And you know, I'd love to give them all a trophy, but I just can't do it, you know. But we're very proud of it. I'm very proud to be able to continue my father's legacy through the foundation and the Golden Arm presentation. And I have two children, and I hope they continue that as well, you know, when I'm not around. But it's a lot of fun, really, Neil. It really is a lot of fun, and it's good to see these kids come into town and put my father's jersey on, and we give him a tour of the Sports Legends Museum here in Baltimore, which houses all of sports in the state of Maryland, including a Colts exhibit, and it kind of gives him a sense of what it was like back then. You know, how did people embrace? Why did they embrace the Colts? And what were they all about? So before he leaves here and with his trophy, he's got a greater sense of what my father meant to this city, what the Colts meant to this town, and what the players from the Colts and the former players meant. It's a wonderful experience for him, and so it's fun. It really is.
It sounds like it's a lot of fun, and I'm going to, again, when I mention off, I guess I want to definitely be in June to hang out with you in June. I'll tell you, whenever you do your event, I'd love to interview for 5 minutes whoever wins it. And promote the foundation again for you.
Well, I appreciate that. Happy to do that for you. We announced the winner, Neil, on December 8th. We actually have him. He has no idea. His entourage knows already, but he doesn't know. So on the 8th, Raymond Berry, who everyone knows was my father's favorite receiver, serves on my board. And Raymond and I go out to get a conference call. We call the coach's office and the players there, and we tape it and film it and welcome them to Baltimore the following Friday on the 12th is the event. So, It's a good time, and we take them through the Sports Legends, and they have a vault. We actually get to go in the vault and handle Babe Ruth's bat and some old items that no one else has ever seen. So it's closed to us, and the executive director, Mike Gibbons, does just a fabulous job for us. So.
All right, well, we'll have to, when we get off air, make sure we have our contact information.
Absolutely.
See if I can get a quick in and get to even talk to Raymond for a couple minutes. Hey, that'd be fantastic to help highlight things that you're doing, because, again, I didn't know about this. And this is what's so great about interviewing interesting people. One thing I want to touch upon, especially being a Pittsburgher, growing up in Pittsburgh, you don't remember much, but for Johnny growing up in Pittsburgh, what do you want our listeners to know, especially in the Pittsburgh area, about Johnny as a person? You talked about, again, he attended Catholic school and different things like that, but what like the whole process, what in the book have
well,
you
Well, I mean, his father died when he was five, and I cover this in the book as well. His father died early when my dad was five, and my father has three siblings. Leonard, his older brother, is still with us. He lives down in Florida. Millie, his oldest sister, lives in Gettysburg area, and Shirley lives right there in Pittsburgh with her family, and so they're all still alive. And, my dad grew up, you know, going to K Catholic schools and playing football. He loved playing football, loved playing all sports, really, playing in the streets and that sort of thing. And still some of his buddies are still around up there, whom we've interviewed. We've interviewed over 100 people for the book. And Millie, my aunt Millie, has never been interviewed before. So this was the first time for her, and she had some wonderful stories about Dad. And, you know, Dad was a very quiet guy. He wasn't an extrovert. He was very much of an introvert. And he didn't talk a lot. And he didn't talk a lot on the football field either. He called the play and hope you did your job. If you didn't, he's going to put your butt on the bench. But, you know, that's just the way he was. And my father was emotional about two things in his life, children and animals. That was it. You know, he never got up or high for a game or any of that. He was just solid, straight across the board. And, you know, every time before a game, a lot of the players, you know, they talk and get rah-rah and all this other stuff. And they go, hey, John, you got anything to say? And my father would just stand there and say, nope. Talk is cheap. Let's go play.
You know, just comment. You know, it's interesting you talk about, and what I try to highlight on my network when I interview athletes and celebrities, I want to talk about their foundations, organizations, how they really children. It goes back to the Total Education Network theme of my show and my network.
Yeah.
And it's unlike anyone else because I'm want to really cover these things because they don't end up in the papers. We don't hear about it. But Johnny really liked going to children's hospitals and interact. So tell us a little bit about that. I think that's a tremendous story. My daughter had a scare. We thought she might have had cancer. She had a low blood platelets and nothing else happened from it, but it was scary. And we had to go to the children's hospital for 6 months drawing blood and all those different things. And I heard about athletes that do go to and do these things. It's tremendous.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, that instilled that early in me in life. You know, he used to take me over to Cernan's Hospital, and which is a crippled children's hospital. And you know, one thing particularly stands out to me, Neil, was this young man who had nothing below the waist. And he was alive, and he was living, and he was sustaining himself. But he got around on a skateboard, and just his hands and his torso on a skateboard. And I just didn't know how I didn't think it was real, but it was real. And these are the kind of things that my father, you know, brought to my attention, son. He said, listen, you know, you've been blessed, and here these people aren't. And what we do is if we can give them a smile on their face for 10 seconds, we've done them good. And so my dad always was there for anybody. If some kid was dying of cancer or whatever, my father would bring him a whole uniform. Here, put the uniform on. You know, there's stories like some of these stories I heard, man, I just was bawling because I didn't realize my father was doing those things. But he did. I mean, and he did it all the time. And if someone called him or sent him a letter and said, you know, my son is injured or hurt and something like this, my father would send him an autograph. Or if he could be there, he'd go there. And there's a story in the book about my father was working for a young man, for this man, and his grandson was doing a play. And the grandson was being Johnny Unitas in the play. Well, my father, they were going out to make some service calls, and my father says, hey, let's stop for a second. Let's swing by the school, and I'll surprise your grandson. So my father did that. He goes over, and of course, all the kids in the class, here's this young man dressed up as my father, and here comes the man, you know, to say, hey, this is cool, this is neat. And so he put smiles on everybody's faces, you know, and that's what he was about. He was about moving forward. He was about winning. He was about making people happy. You know, he whistled all the time. You could tell when he was coming because if whoever was whistling, that's my dad.
see, that's tremendous. Yeah. And I wish that professional athletes, and really, Johnny, I will not knock all the NFL and say they're all bad. That's not true at all.
And it's not. I'm not the judge of them either, Neil. Yeah. And I'm not saying. I'm just saying what I saw, what I see. Or you know, frankly, I don't see some of that now. But it should be more.
Oh,
okay.
Yes.
I'm sure the Rooneys, I think that, you know, the Steelers have a fabulous organization. I think it's probably the best in the entire National Football League. And I could say that with confidence, you know, even though they cut my father way back then, there's no hard feelings at all. But I just think it's one of the best run organizations in the country of all the football teams. And I think that, you know, those guys are probably doing more than in the community than probably some of these other teams. And I could be wrong, but I'm hoping I'm not, that everyone is out there doing the same thing and really giving back, because that's what it's all about.
Well, honestly, this is the thing, Johnny, that I've learned is the NFL is one of the best professional sports organizations that helps kids and they're in foundation-wise compared to a lot of other places. Even though there's some rotten apples in the NFL, it doesn't mean there are a lot of people that look at people like your father, look at people like the Rooneys and say, I want to continue to bring that legacy. I want to be able to give back. And I see the platform of being a great professional athlete, and I want to take that to the next level in my life after football or even during that time, because I've been given this gift. I want to give back and pay it forward. And I think that's why I'm so glad we're hearing about this, about Johnny, and not talking about some of the things in the book that'll be interesting to uncover about, you know, some of the tough times, which we all deal with when we're writing about somebody. You're going to find some difficult times. Life is not easy. So
it really is not easy. And it's just, you know, it's life. You just have to keep looking forward and keep having a positive attitude. You know, my father, there's never the word can't never existed in my father's vocabulary. If my son said, pop, I can't do that. He would, what did you say? And there's no such word as can't. JC, you know, I mean, because my son's John the Third, but we call him JC. As long as he doesn't think he's Jesus Christ, you know, I'm good. But other than that, you know,
is he playing football? Is he playing?
He did play football for a couple years at Villanova, and then decided that football wasn't for him. He really wasn't given an opportunity, to be honest with you. And I don't blame him for, you know, not he's busting his butt and not getting any playing time. So he decided that he was going to quit football and continue with his education, and he ended up finishing up college at University of Tampa with cum laude in communications, and he's very proud of him. He works in Philadelphia now at Urban Outfitters as a buyer. And my daughter, Jillian, she's another athlete. She was a walk-on volleyball player at Flagler College down in Florida, and she's now the public relations manager for Andretti Sports Marketing, which has some roots in Pittsburgh, you know, Mario and everybody. So Jillian is their PR representative for Andretti Sports
Marketing. Oh, really? Oh, wow. I had Jared Andretti on my show. I'm connected with him on LinkedIn. So
It's just the Andretti. They all know Jillian very well, and Michael and Marco, and Marco's driving. Michael runs the show down there. And unfortunately, they're in Indianapolis, but other than that, I won't hold it against her.
Yes. So there's a lot of stories that you could talk about. And the last question, and this is a strange one because of being Baltimore and how the Ravens and the Baltimore Colts have kind of become, you know, close to each other in a way. And they've taken on kind of roots together. Have you noticed that? Am I right about that?
I follow college football a lot more than I follow professional football, to be honest with you, because of what I do with the foundation and college football. I follow football, don't get me wrong, I know all the players, and I think some of the Colts, the old Colts, the ones that are played after my dad, like the Bruce Lairds and Pivix and people like that, that are kind of being embraced by the Ravens, and rightfully so. Steve Bisciotti, wonderful owner. Has a great organization over there. They do their thing, and they try to involve everybody that's left over from the Colts, and you know, including Lenny Moore and everybody, which is great. And you know, they involved my dad, and that was fine. He enjoyed all that, but it's just not the same. I mean, for me, you know, if you ever go to the Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame, the biggest tragedy for me is when you walk into the mementos room, and they have all this stuff about the Baltimore Colts and what they did from 1958 and on through and everything. But at the very top, it says Indianapolis Colts. I mean, that just to me is wrong. It just name it what it is. I mean, I know they kept the name, but just if this not your stuff. And they have the same thing in the press guides. So to me, that's a sore subject, and I don't know how to cure it. I'm not going to waste my time in trying to fix it either, but because it won't get fixed. You know, you're dealing with the big white elephant. And I mean the NFL. So, and it's the same thing with St. Louis, the St. Louis Rams. They did the same thing. We got a mannequin of Merlin Olsen with his jersey pads and everything else from the Los Angeles Rams. It says St. Louis at the top. So that's Taglio's problem. He made the mistake, and I think it's unfortunate that, you know, we don't have our name back. I mean, Art Modell did the right thing in giving Cleveland the name back, and we have a team in Baltimore, and we're happy we have a team in Baltimore, and I continue to wish them great success. They've done very well so far.
Yeah, they definitely have, and it's an interesting thing how things go and how people have to move at times, but this is this is the business. You see it in college football all the time now with realignment.
Yep.
It's all about money, but yep. I'm glad to be able to give that backstory for sure. So, Johnny, where's the best place we can purchase your book and learn more about you? Where can we go?
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate it. Well, you can always go to my website, johnnyunitas.com, and under the collectibles icon, you'll find the book, and it's direct link to triumphbooks.com, and you can buy it from them. You can also find it on amazon.com, and I believe Costco's are carrying it, and of course Barnes & Noble's are carrying it as well. And I've got an appearance coming up on the 6th in the Barnes & Noble in Bel Air, Maryland. for a couple hours to sign some books, and have another one after that on the 13th at White Marsh for the Barnes & Nobles, and then one final one in Ellicott City at Barnes & Noble on the 20th. But, yeah, I mean, it's just I think everyone will enjoy the book. As I say, it's another side of my dad. If you love my dad or like how he played, and I cover some football in there, some things you will say, wow, he did that in football too? Or he said that, or he told the coach to do what? You know, all that's in my book, and I just try to bring out the best of my father. And again, as I say, it's not all, you know, candy and chocolate. You know, there's some things in there that you'll learn about my dad that you didn't know before. And I'm proud of it, you know, because I think it's important for kids that grow up with a parent that's a celebrity, understand that it's not easy, but you can work through it, and just be yourself. That's all I can tell you to be yourself. Your parents have done a good enough job for you up at this point. Just be yourself and not, you know, float on your parents' coattails, because you're your own person.
Well, Johnny, I hope we can continue this friendship and relationship after this interview, especially get to maybe meet in June in Pittsburgh when you come out to Pittsburgh. And we'll stay in touch and see if we could cover, interview your winner of the Golden Arm Trophy. So I'm excited to talk about all those things and stay in touch.
Absolutely.
So thanks again for calling, Johnny.
Okay. Thanks, Dale. Appreciate your time.
You're welcome. All right, take care. Bye. You're listening to Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment.